Thank you so much for having me with you today. Thank you especially to Reverend Bill and Reverend Bill for inviting me to be with you all. My name is Erin. I work with Chaplains on the Harbor in Grace Harbor County. And if you don't know much about us, we're a church of about 500 poor and homeless people. And incarcerated people. About 10% of our congregation is incarcerated at any time. And we do a bunch of stuff. We do a lot of feeding programs, survival support for people living on the street, legal advocacy, harm reduction, and we also started 2 years ago a 4-acre vegetable farm that we run as a CSA to create supportive employment and living wage jobs for people who are getting off the street and into recovery. So at the next service, one of our lead guys on the farm is going to be joining me. And if you're around for that, make sure to shake his hand. I'll talk about that stuff later. First, I'm gonna talk about the gospel. What does it mean to be made clean? What does it mean to be healed? Are these the same thing? There's a line I learned a few years ago from people who are in recovery from addiction. We have a lot of folks in our parish who are either struggling with addiction or in recovery, in active recovery. And the line I learned is one that kind of pushes back on some of our common language around sobriety. So phrases we use like getting clean or clean and sober. The line goes like this. Don't call me clean. I was never dirty to begin with. I think Jesus would like this line, especially when I read today's gospel reading. One thing that pretty much everyone agrees on is that lepers were deeply stigmatized in Jesus' time. They were a people considered unclean, and Jesus refused to further that stigma. He did the opposite, right? He risked taking on stigma himself in order to break through the isolation that his society tried to impose on suffering people. He touched lepers when they sought him out and asked to be touched. He offered healing. But he did not take the credit for the healing himself. Instead, today and pretty consistently through his ministry, Jesus recognizes that the people who are choosing to break out of their own shame and isolation and reach for healing is where the real miracle always lies. He tells the healed Samaritan in today's gospel story, "Get up and go on your way. Your faith has made you well." We kind of mangle this word, faith. The Greek in which the text is originally written doesn't translate faith as belief necessarily. It's not a word that means sticking to a doctrine and then thought policing yourself 24/7. The word here is pistos. It's much closer to trust, sometimes even confidence. Let's read it like that. Get up and go on your way. Your trust has made you well. Get up and go on your way. Your confidence has made you well. People claiming their own worth and taking a courageous step to assert their humanity despite a hostile and violent world. That seems to be the miracle here as Jesus sees it. Maybe he has magic hands, maybe not, but that's not really the point. The point is that even when people are scapegoated for their own suffering and left to die on the margins of society, sometimes they refuse. Sometimes those people decide for themselves that they still matter. And when they do this, God says they're right. God says they deserve to have their cries heard and their demands for healing met. Our world has changed a lot since Jesus' time, and also not very much. Social stigmatization still has the power to crush people. Whole populations are still rendered unclean and viewed as moral failures, responsible for their own suffering, even when they are clearly being impacted by forces far beyond their individual control. Leprosy was, and is still today, a disease that mostly, but not exclusively, affects poor people. It's a poor people's disease because malnutrition and the presence of other illnesses increase one's risk of transmission, and poor people tend to be sicker and more malnourished. We also know today that genetics play a role. Some people are born with genes less resistant to leprosy than others. Similarly, while substance abuse disorders are certainly not exclusive to the poor, we do know that poor communities, like Grays Harbor County, where I work, are often structurally flooded with both a cheap, abundant supply of drugs and a lot of intergenerational trauma. And at the same time, these communities are rarely funded for the means to heal. We also know some people are born with genes which make them more susceptible to addictive behaviors and substances. And so in these ways, leprosy really parallels the disease of addiction. Medical research has even gone so far to directly compare the stigma faced by people with addiction to the stigma faced by people with leprosy. At least one recent study found them to have, this is a quote, a high degree of commonality in stigma drivers with the co-occurrence of five components: labeling, stereotyping, separation, status loss, and discrimination. So it's not far-fetched to read today's gospel as an illustration of how Jesus might engage with people who are struggling with active addiction. But there's more than just this. 10 lepers come to Jesus. He tells them to go show themselves to the priests, and as they're headed that way, the text tells us they are made clean. Jesus hasn't touched them. The priests haven't even seen them yet. Just the act of pursuing their own healing by going to present their needs before the very authorities who declared them unclean and unworthy was apparently enough to make the miracle happen. And then one of them notices he is healed, and he stops, and he turns around. This part is really important. When you've been on the receiving end of stigma, one of the tried and true ways of getting out from under it is to distance yourself from other suffering people and throw them under the bus. You can probably think of examples. In the outdated recovery frameworks still circulating and in use through most of this country, sometimes that can look like somebody who gets sober from their own addiction becoming the most vitriolic hater of people who are still in active use. Similarly, the codes that shaped public perception and social stigma in Jesus' time did not only render the lepers themselves unclean, They also marked anyone associating with lepers unclean as well. This means that if Jesus was rubbing elbows with lepers, Jesus was also marked as unclean. So it makes sense that these nine other lepers would just run, right, as soon as they were healed. Finally, after years of loneliness and shame and pain, they were free to re-enter society, and they were not about to give that up just so they could go say thanks to Jesus, who would, by association, mark them again. But the Samaritan does. I don't know why. The economic and social risk of doing so would have hit him just as hard. Maybe as an immigrant, he felt less culturally bound to the same conventions as Jesus and the others. Maybe because he is a stranger in a strange land, he knows his grip on stability is tenuous at best. And so he sees it in his best interest to stick with the one person who showed him mercy instead of fleeing back into the arms of a system that hurt him to begin with. But either way, the Samaritan is the one who breaks the cycle of scapegoating in this story. He doesn't leave Jesus behind to bootstrap his own way out of stigma or die from it. He reaches back to him. If there's anything I'm proudest of at our work at Chaplains on the Harbor, it is the times we have done this. It is the leaders in our work who, struggling with addiction, poverty, homelessness, and criminalization themselves, have refused to abandon other struggling people once they got on their feet. I am proudest of the ways we as a team have reached back again and again, proving not only the kindness of struggling people, but also the insight, the skills, the intelligence, and the power of people who have been at the bottom. And we've done this at some cost. Almost like clockwork, every year now, local chatter starts buzzing louder about how our projects enable people who are struggling with meth and heroin addictions, because we feed people, because we help with emergency shelter. And currently this chatter has gone beyond nasty comments and escalated to individuals taking it on themselves to harass and attempt to sabotage the county needle exchange program and Narcan distribution program, despite the extensive proof that these programs save lives and strengthen public health for everyone. Threats against our staff, threats of violence, explicit threats of violence, are par for the course. 2,000 years after Jesus, it can feel like we haven't really come that far. And yet, we have seen incredible things. We have watched leaders in our work go from homelessness and active substance abuse to testifying before the US Senate and questioning presidential candidates on their policies for affordable housing. We've watched people living in homeless encampments assert their constitutional and human rights in federal court against local governments attempting to push them further to the margins. We have filed lawsuits with those people, and we have won. Jesus tells the Samaritan, the one who returns, "Your faith has made you well." But the verb used here, "made you well," is actually closer to "save." Your faith has saved you. 10 were healed, but only one was saved, the one who came back. If we think of salvation as an individual experience between a pious believer and God, we miss the point. God saves us when we reach back for each other, when we refuse to abandon each other to the loneliness of our own oppression and shame. Salvation is something we do with each other. Salvation is solidarity.